This episode of Do Better, DDOT was made possible in part by For Our Future Michigan.
City, like I tried getting into the urban planning department, they wouldn't fuck with me. But
I wonder why
that's the case, and then that's how we want you to be here on this podcast, just yourself. And definitely want to welcome you as a guest on our podcast show. Is it a show?
It's a show. It's indeed a show. Like,
yeah, so
all right, so let's do our quick introduction.
Yes, my
name is Sam.
My name is Ray.
And your name is?
I'm Chris.
We got Chris here in the house, y'all. We got a little co-host, guest host with us.
I know, our first host for season two.
And it's all, we're about to wrap up, actually, because I think we're going to do maybe two more episodes and then we out for the rest of the year. I want a break. I want to enjoy my Xmas or whatever you call it.
Right, and we can, like put the greatest hits on there to, get people to listen to that.
You really trying to get me to do more work. Like, that's what that is, because that falls to me as the person who edits the audio, so.
Well, that's because you, let's not do this.
Okay, so this is Do Better, DDOT Podcast, and we want to say thank you once again to everybody who listens to us and supports us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And then also, if you want to reach out to us more and talk to me and Ray, you can go on our email, dobetterd.at@gmail.com.
Send us those stories.
Send us those fun stories so we can do another Are You Afraid of the Bus segment, because I love those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So would you mind doing housekeeping and DART info?
Sure. My favorite part. All right. DART is a new way to pay for transit. Save before you pay. No more transfers. No more additional fees. Pay once and ride on both DDOT and Smart. All of this information and more is also on the DDOT website, DetroitMI.gov. Again, that is DetroitMI.gov. The DART app is up and running. You can now purchase your 4-hour, 24-hour, 7-day, and 31-day regional passes through the DART app, available for both Apple and Android. However, there is a 15-cent fee per pass, not per transaction. So if you buy in two passes, you're paying 30 cents for both of them. Do better on that, DDOT.
Thank you. Excellent as always.
Thank you.
So once again, we got Chris with us today, and you're a friend of the show, right? Like, you've been listening to us, and he finally gets to see, like, behind the scenes of how ghetto it really is. this is the least ghetto.
Yeah, we out here in Avalon right now.
Not Avalon.
What's it? Oh, that's
how ghetto it is.
In our view. Yes.
So we were supposed to meet at Avalon, but they loud over there, so we switched over to the Fisher Building, which is absolutely lovely.
Yes. different environment for sure.
Yeah, and the T-Bangs, like, I needed it. Because I was like, I'm not feeling it today. It's windy. Almost got, like, blew over into traffic today.
I almost got blown away, too. If I had an umbrella, I would have been Sherry Boppin' around or Mary Poppins. Oh, that was The Simpsons.
Who is Sherry Boppin'?
That was The Simpsons version of it.
Okay.
I watched too much
Simpsons. Yeah, like, when I tell you my Afro blew to the right and it stayed, like, I was not pleased.
Wow, stand power.
Yeah.
All right.
So why don't you introduce yourself a little bit? Just give us a bit about your background, where you're coming from, and why you're so interested in public transit.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, my name is Christopher LaFleur. I'm originally from the east side. Bounced around a bit as a kid. Moved between the city and the suburbs, so that gave me an interesting view of how to get between the city and the suburbs through transit. I didn't get my license until I was 22. So,
that's a transfer story.
So, like, that's why I really fell in love with it. Because, like, I had to learn how to hang out and get to places. I finished up school, and then my first job out of college was with city council member Janae Ayers. So I worked there from 2016. Went back in the summer. So right now I'm a student at U of M studying urban planning and public policy. So yeah, I've been studying transit for a long time now. So I was knocking them doors from 2016 for the RTA. It was like one of the we was out there at Rosa Parks passing out the pamphlets, yeah. And so hopefully
I remember that.
Yeah.
We got a true bus warrior.
With them flyers.
Yeah.
Yes. Really? Dang.
Yeah, we were trying to get this. We were still in Japan, though, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, I was gone. You were coming, but you haven't came back to the U.S. yet. So.
Mm-hmm. I missed it.
Yeah, so wait, where'd you go for undergrad?
I went to the school called Williams College. It's in Massachusetts. Yeah, I played football out there. It was a good time. Okay. Study like economics. So, it was good.
So that was your undergrad degree in economics?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. That was my original study, too.
Mm.
Oh, look at you, econ people. Well, I did nothing so fascinating. But anyway, it's not about me. It's not about me. So we talked about a bit about your work experience. What are you into now?
I'm into now. So yeah. I got a couple jobs. One, I work on this U of M project that goes out to Benton Harbor. And so we're doing transit planning. So the other day I was knocking on doors in Benton Harbor, asking people to fill out a survey, trying to see if people can access the transit lines there.
Mm-hmm.
They're a really small community. Like it's not like Detroit. So they got like two lines. That's it. They got like two like routes.
Yeah, that's a really small town.
Yeah. So, but it's cool, man. People in Benton Harbor are super friendly. I've knocked on a bunch of doors and like all through Metro Detroit. No one's ever invited me into their home. Benton Harbor, they're like, come on in.
But look, I'm going to say this, Chris, though. The first time I actually was able, like, I learned how to canvas was actually on the east side. And I actually had people offer me water. I got flirted with. So.
Oh, no.
People are friendly, too. So,
I'm not coming up to see you. I've been offered many things walking.
No.
You said many things, though. Like, you tell. Like, bear it all. What you get offered.
It's so funny how all of us could relate to this because we all have similar type of work.
Yeah. I did some canvassing over the summer with another org, and I did some canvassing with For Our Future, like, in the fall.
So you out here for transit.
Yeah. A lot of people were, like, when you knock on the door and we ask them all those questions about how they feel about their community and things like that, a lot of them were like, well, the bus system could be better. This is in Detroit, by the way. So they were, a lot of people complained about it. They said, like, it's slow, it doesn't come, it's dirty. There were just, like, a whole, like, list that I looked at that I got sent, and I was like, I feel the same way. Please come to the meetings every third Thursday on the second floor of the Rosa Parks Transit Center from 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m.
Yes.
And let your voices be heard, because we can't just be at home complaining, right? We got to go to the people. We got to go to the DDOT reps and be like, this is what I want, and it needs to happen.
And may I say, man, I'm so proud of y'all for the last episode I listened to. Was y'all talking about how the DDOT meetings were getting moved from monthly to quarterly or something like that? And y'all shut that down, didn't you? Like, you had your own meeting?
I love it. Yes, we had a little meeting.
We got pushed out too. It took them less than 5 minutes for them to approach us and everything. So we restored the monthly meetings.
There you go.
Right? And
that's how you do it.
Was there to record it all, right?
Yeah, we was like, Angelica, we not having it. I'm sorry, man.
Run us our monthly meetings.
We want it
right?
back.
Right. So tell us, like, how were people receptive to, like, your questions when you were surveying folks in Benton Harbor, though? Like, we were talking about Detroit a lot, but I want to hear their insight on that. Interesting.
I mean, I think it's similar. I think a lot of the cities in Michigan, I'm not sure about elsewhere, but a lot of cities in Michigan face the same problems where you need a car to get around, or it's really difficult to get around without it. That's what everyone said to me. They're like, yeah, I got a car because I need it, or I don't have a car, and that's like the first thing I'm trying to do. And like, especially in Benton Harbor. So Benton Harbor, my research focuses on like access to opportunity and how transportation like is that vehicle, no pun intended, to get you there.
It's okay.
It really is. We need to stop.
I'm all about transit puns. Benton Harbor is interesting because they have a sister city, like St. Joseph. Benton Harbor is 85% black, I think, and St. Joseph's is the opposite, 85% white.
Wow.
And so a lot of people from Benton Harbor have to commute to St. Joseph's through the bus system, but only Benton Harbor pays for the bus system. And so St. Joseph's businesses like use workers from Benton Harbor like to make their money, but they don't like help them get to work and help them like pay into the
debt. That sounds real interesting. What a coincidence.
You know, I wonder what other area, you know.
I really am just trying to, I don't know. Yeah. Nothing comes to mind.
You know, but I'm trying to think about it and it's leaving my mind too. But yeah. So that's the same complex. So they're going into, I guess, can't really call it suburbs, it's like right there next door to it, but it's exploitation in a way too, so you're relying on these people to get to your businesses, to staff them, to work them, and patronize them, but they're not investing in the means in order to do so, because what this seems like to me in this state is that the only way you can get around is a car, and they set up the economic system that way so that you're hopelessly dependent on a car to get around because of this anti-trans attitude that I thought was just limited to the Metro Detroit area. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
And my background is in sociology, my academic background, so I'm sitting here fascinated about that and troubled by it too, because there's no comfort in knowing that that same complex concept is existing all over the state.
Wow. So, like you said before, you're getting into urban planning, like that's what you're going to school for and things like that. So, within the realm of like urban planning, do you see many African Americans in that space making decisions about places, like especially Detroit being 85% African Americans?
I think the city does, in terms of Detroit urban planners, I think they make a conscious effort to have black representation. I think they can do better. I also think that they need to do a better job of community representation, representation.
Yeah.
Detroit is a very unique city. And you need to have a certain level of knowledge in order to do something like urban planning about the community that you're in. And you can't really like plan something that you are scared to live in, or like vegan. And I ain't saying that no one is. I'm not calling shots, but like my philosophy of urban planning should just be more community development. I think like this, like the way the city urban planning department was a little bit more conceptual than I would like. I want to see community development corporations and like community development financial institutions and like trying to build up block clubs more. And they do that. They got the department of neighborhoods. They got all the urban planning people, and like, and I'm good friends with a lot of them, but I want to see a stronger emphasis from up top coming down and getting more of that within the staff, because I think that is really where, you know, you see real progress.
Okay. Yeah, because honestly, that what you just said about people not living in the space that they're actually doing actually really struck something with me, because the last meeting we went to with the DDOT reps, someone by the name of Derek Holloway, friend of the show, asked all of the reps, like, how many of you actually ride the bus? And how many people raised their hand? Do you remember? It was like maybe three.
It was like eight people up there, three that actually rode the bus. So they had no insight on the service. And this is
and yet they're making the decisions.
That's troubling. That's really troubling. Like, you're not from the community. And the thing is, not every urban planner is also going to come from the community. So that warrants and pushes them to say, hey, I need to talk to people in this neighborhood and engage, and not just engage, because people love to use that word, but literally have conversations and co-create with the community. So often I perceive kind of urban planning as, this is good for you and accept this, but I know there's more to it than that, right?
I just think urban planning as a field is a little too I don't know, pompous in the sense that like you need this degree to be an urban planner. When I think I read an article sometimes, like, kids that grow up in the city are urban planners. They know how this thing go. They know how like a place works. Like, that type of knowledge is innate. So I mean, you don't need no piece of paper to say you can do that.
I agree.
If you give someone a pen and a paper and their ideas in the neighborhood, you'd be amazed what people can do. And we do that on on some other like in my day job and my work stuff like that. There's been
neighborhood envisioning projects where people will design their communities.
Think that the degree is a way to kind of weed out the competition.
Or to kind of keep it at a class.
Like an elitist type.
Yeah, or lock out certain people that have those lived experiences, like you just said, like, you know, like, and that's what, I think maybe it could be a both end, right? Like, urban planning, I think, should include community, should be part of the process.
I think they make an emphasis to do it. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of urban planners, at least, like, the planners that I have talked to, I think they go out and, like, make it known that they're trying to be, you know, communal. I don't think that we do a terrible job. I think Detroit is my favorite city because of, like, the community, because of community development and all that type of stuff. I think we do know that that is our strength, and we should just emphasize it even more. The more we can build our neighborhoods up, the better we be.
Cool. So I do have a quick question. What do you think about the whole shared use mobility, like, basically, like, scooters, bikes, Lyft, Uber, whatever, and its place within urban planning and then, like, just the community too, because do you think it's, like, good, bad?
All right, so I'm gonna use this to segue into, like, my research. All right, cool. So
perfect.
At U of M, I'm a Dallas Sustainability Fellow, and I'm, like, researching the viability of public-private partnerships to aid in work commutes. So, like we said, we were talking about the Benton Harbor St. Joe example. A lot of people live in one community and have to work in another. I think, like, only 26% of Detroiters actually work within the city limits. I could be wrong about that.
No, it but, sounds about right.
Yeah, it's about that rate. Right. Yeah, in my work, that's the same thing.
So, in order to get to your job, you gotta find a way to get to the burbs. And, you know, as y'all probably talk about this every week, like, how hard it is.
It is hard. It's hard getting around the city sometimes.
It's hard getting around the city. It's hard getting out the city. It's hard getting in the city. The challenges for the Motor City, man, for, like we are, like, the mobility capital of the world and like that. The challenges getting around here are unmatched. But in terms of that, I've been studying, like you said, the shared use mobility, the mobility innovation. Like, those ideas, like, the ideas of how people are getting around in, you know, 2020, 2030, like, in the future, it's pretty cool. I will say, like, I'm a big proponent of simplicity. And I think that's something that VDOT is making known now. They're, like, trying to, like redesign their schedules. I was just talking with some VDOT staffers about, like, how they're, like, redesigning them so that you can look at it and it's legible. Like, you know, I don't know if y'all ever been to, like, the library. I'm sure y'all haven't. Like, I saw them schedules and I don't know if you could ever read them or nothing like that.
The print is so fine.
It's so small.
Yeah, so they,
and I have to, like, I have to be transparent. I kind of know what you're talking about, but I'll let you just continue.
So they're trying to figure that out. But, like, so getting, like, to a place where you can transfer between the city and suburbs, and it is important, and being able to get to that route. My favorite example of this, so it's the first mile, last mile problem, they call it in transit. So shared use mobility, the you know, the scooters, bikes, and everything like that are supposed to be that even Lyft, Uber, they got different apps now. Those are all supposed to be solutions to this problem. Like, my favorite example of this in, like, our planning is the Telegraph route. I'm not sure if the 8 mile bus goes to Telegraph. I don't think it does. I think it cuts down like right before at Lasser. Maybe it might go to Telegraph.
I think you said the 8 mile. It goes to Telegraph.
I think that one goes to Telegraph. But it's really difficult for you to reach. So the Telegraph route in SMART is the longest route in the entire, like, Metro Detroit area in the system.
I didn't know that.
It goes from downriver all the way up to Pontiac. And so there's a lot of different opportunities along that corridor. And so it's really hard for someone to use DDOT to get to the Telegraph bus. And so, like, finding ways, like, through either shared use mobility, like, systems, or, like, having a designated transfer center within the city for people trying to get to either, you know, Western Wayne County or, you know, downriver, would be really useful. And so, like, that's the type of thinking that we have to do when we talk about transit planning, urban planning.
Absolutely. Yes. Getting us to practical areas where we already go anyway, rather than trying to, you know, I don't know the other way they design the routes, but
But also I do like the problem with some of the avenues of like the shared use mobility is like Lyft and Uber are not very cheap, at least not in this area, because when I used to live in Los Angeles, they have Lyft Line and Uber Pool where you can share the ride with someone else and just like cut the price almost in half, or maybe even more than half. But we don't have that here. If I try to take a Lyft or an Uber from my house to this area, New Center, it will run me about $15 to $17, not even like during the surge.
And not only that, too, like if you have a like an electric scooter that you use to like, you know, move around if you can't walk, and you're waiting on your Lyft and it cannot accommodate you, what good is that Lyft?
Oh, don't get me wrong. I don't think that that's the solution.
I don't think
too many people going to ride the scooter to work every day all that type of stuff. And
we live in Michigan, so.
No. What I meant by the electric scooter, meaning like someone's has a physical disability.
True, so exactly. That's very, word? It's not for everyone.
Right? Yeah, it's not equitable.
It's not equitable.
And that's the thing I'm kind of worried about, like in urban planning and like with the mobility, is like, let's just add Uber and Lyft to the transit system. It's not going to work for everybody. Yeah. Like that, even if I broke a leg and I'm crutches, that's probably not going to be the most.
Even the Metro Lyft that people have is not working for some people because it costs too much for them.
NDOT has a program. Y'all know Night Shift, the Uber to Work. So
I've heard of it.
So
the Lyft thing, right?
Mm-hmm, it's the Lyft credit. Yeah. So you come. I think it's after midnight. I could be wrong.
I believe it's after midnight. Yeah.
You come home from work and you could use if you're not on a 24-hour route, then you can use a Lyft credit to get you home after using a DDOT route. I've never used the program. I don't know exactly how it works. But one of the things that I thought was cool, a lot of people, like myself, don't use smartphones. And so they increase the range of things to include taxi cabs now. So you can call a taxi and get that paid for as well. So that was a really cool program the city's doing.
That's really smart. I didn't know about the taxi part, but I knew about
the taxi part of that either. That's why I was just talking about kind of news to me on that.
I don't know. If that's another thing they need to get that news out.
They're not.
But that's y'all. That's why y'all.
They're not communication very good at marketing episode, too. Then. Yeah.
Yeah, we should definitely.
Let's teach them how to market. Teach you how to market.
The funniest thing to me, I'm about to crack on somebody, but like, we were at the DDOT community input meeting, and someone was like, you know, there are no signs outside of the Rosa Parks Transit Center letting people know that this meeting is happening and that it happens here every month. And they were like, maybe you guys should put like a sign on the window or like those cute little bistro signs people do. They draw on chalkboard and like leave it outside. And so I looked at the lady who does marketing. I don't remember her name. She's like writing down notes. And I'm like, aren't you the marketing? Like, aren't you the person who does marketing?
Y'all can't see my facial expression, but I'm squinting my eyes and have.
I'm like, this is marketing 101. Every restaurant and coffee shop has those signs.
I don't even do that work, and that's common sense to me. If I want to bring people into a building, I put a sign up, right? Yeah.
They have the meetings and no sign anywhere in Rosa Parks. There's no sign about the meetings at all.
I mean, I could talk to you a little bit more about like my research, and so a lot of it is trying to help people access opportunity. Like Detroit has the lowest workforce participation rate within all our cities in America. That means people, it's different than the unemployment rate. Unemployment rate calculate how many people are looking for work and they can't get it.
Right.
The workforce participation rate, look at how many people have given up trying to find work. And so that's a big problem that we have, is trying to get people back into the workplace and like trying to find that opportunity. A lot of people giving up hope. Like driver responsibility fees, we're still dealing with that.
So did they get rid of those, or is there still an issue with those?
So they got rid of them, but a lot of people still have to get their license back and get. So I've talked to a lot of employers, especially within the skilled trades and manufacturing companies and stuff like that. A lot of people won't even give you a chance if you don't have that license and you don't have that reliable transportation.
Yeah, definitely, because when you go on there with the applications, they're like, do you have reliable transportation? They really mean, do you have a car? Because for me, I'll say because I feel like the bus is reliable enough for me to get to and from
when
work.
When it works correctly.
When it works correctly and I plan correctly, I can get to work, it's reliable, but I know they really mean, do you have a car? And right. if I say no, they will definitely toss my application out.
Yeah, so that speaks to the research that you're doing. Like, how do we get more people into these opportunities? That's an interesting question that you're navigating.
Yeah, so, I mean, when we're talking about the shared use mobility, I want to see that as avenue. It just takes creative thought. You know, say what you will about Dan Gilbert and Bear Rock, and they do a lot in terms of mobility innovation, though. And so, like, whether it's cool or not, like, they got all them shuttles downtown that you really, that not everyone can get on, but they people can get on, and they get around. They get from their parking place to work, and they have, like, main mobility right now, which is, like, driverless cars, and they're trying to...
I saw those things around.
And that's the thing. Like, it would be cool if that was for, you know, a service for, like, uh-huh. residents. And I see him trying to replicate that uh-huh. environment for his mm-hmm. employees, uh-huh. and it's such... It's like a limited mm-hmm. skill type of thing. But I've seen... Do they work? Do the... Have y'all seen them?
I've seen them. I saw one driving by. I was like, hey, come here.
Wait, can you go inside of one?
I didn't go.
We saw one night.
Yeah, I saw
it. But they have an attendant. It's not like there's no one in the front. They do have someone in the car just to make sure everything runs smoothly.
I
want to
see a car rolling around
but
with
they're
nobody.
They're not
just
actively driving.
In. Like, yeah. I want to see that one day. Uh-huh. So. Yeah. Yeah, and I think some of those vehicles can actually accommodate people.
I'm not too sold on autonomous vehicles yet as like a solution for anything. I like them pushing the envelope. What thing I'm really interested in is this thing called Scoop. It's a carpooling app, and it's basically like you put in your location, you put in where you're trying to get to, like the workplace, and enough people from the job. Are doing it, so some people can carpool and pick you up, and if they don't have that carpool, then they'll just back it up with Lyft. And so carpooling is, I think, one of the ways that we can like really sort of figure this out, and using new technologies like mobility innovation technology to sort of make carpooling easier and like at a click of a button.
Because it's been around like since the
everyone's been doing that forever.
Since we have vehicles, like the 50s and stuff. Like people, that's normal. So now we're using a mobility or mobility as a service, MaaS. That's kind of like the thing LA does too with their department, where you're just getting this litany of different services that you open up an app. And I think that's a very interesting way not only to free up space in your own vehicle, because this is the thing, a bus can take off about 60 cars off the road. So let's take that concept. You got empty seats up in your car that's taking up the road. Fill those empty spaces with people that's kind of into the same way. So you're hybridizing like a jitney and Lyft and Uber, those two concepts. Because we used to have those kind of jitney services here where it was kind of like a private, I wouldn't say not so legal way of kind of carpooling people. So this is a way to do it in a formalized way. Is there any other mobility initiatives for residents, like the city is trying to kind of create together?
Yeah.
Is there anything you can say to us?
Something's already happening in Osborne. Shout out to the Osborne Business Association. Those are my people. They have a new, they have car share. So y'all ever seen like Zipcar?
Oh yeah, like Zipcar or like Maven or something.
Yeah,
exactly.
So,
Maven.
So I think the entire community has access to the cars, and they can check it out and then bring it back when they're done with their like whatever they need to do. I think that's a really interesting way to go about it too.
So this is going to be like a city kind of like car rental service. Would it be like through an app or something like that?
I don't know how they're going to expand it, and I don't even know how they even like get into the program initially. I think they have either two or three cars that are available for someone from the neighborhood to check out. And I think it's a pilot project right now. D-Dive is doing a lot of different pilot projects. So like Night Shift is one of them. The Osborne thing is one of them. I'm trying to think of what else they got going. But I mean,
I think we need to do a little bit of research, because I'm like,
maybe we need to get them on the cast, right?
Maybe.
It's called like, Car For You. That's what it's
Car
called.
Car For You, okay.
Yeah. I actually, I have to be transparent. I know about this. Now I know what you're talking about, because I've attended a mobility conference. It's called the Shared Use Mobility Conference in Chicago this year.
Okay.
Ooh, fancy. You out here jet setting? Okay.
It was early this year in March, and some folks from the city of Detroit, it was... Mr. De Laverne and a few others from his office that spoke about this pilot. So now hearing this from you is confirmed. When is it going to be for all of Detroit? That's the thing.
I don't work for them. I was just telling him.
Pull the answers out.
Get as much out of that orange as you can. He's trying to keep it under wraps. I said everything I know is coming out.
We like to laugh on here.
So I guess to wrap it up, we got one more question.
All right.
And basically, given that we are always talking to people, like we've all done canvassing, right? Like everybody's done it for our future, lots of other orgs. So given that we talk to people at the doors and things like that, and they're all demanding basically better transportation routes, what can we do as like people who are part of grassroots organizations to basically get more involved, like getting the citizens more involved? So we knock on their door, we ask them about the problems, but how do we get those people involved, basically?
And that's always been the biggest question. Mm-hmm. And I always try to say go to people where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the best transit, you know, data collecting is happening on buses.
Yes.
A lot of the best community organizing is happening at rec centers and libraries.
Yes.
If you can go to, I mean, and that just comes from like knowledge of like the people. If you're working with the people, if you're one of the people, then you know where everything's happening.
Exactly. Go where the people are.
Yeah, go where the people are.
You're able to effectively organize when you know.
Yeah. Because honestly, having them meet you somewhere is just like, it's not going to happen. You got to come to them.
Yeah, 100%.
That's why I like knocking on those doors and being like, I'm here. There's no excuse, right? Like,
exactly.
You can pause that Netflix.
Or, the thing is, if you're asking people to come to you, you're replicating a form of oppression for people, too. Mm-hmm. It's already difficult for the person to get around. So, meet them
they already complain about that's transportation and buses, and you want them to come all the way somewhere
organize
on the bus.
One-on-one. Meet people where they are.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to... I don't want to cut this topic short. Actually, I can talk about in Benton Harbor. That was what we did. We went to an apartment complex.
Mm-hmm.
I think the coolest canvassing I've done ever was like in a senior citizen home. That was.
I need to hear this.
No, I mean that's like the most simple door knocking you can do. I think door knocking. We've all had canvassing experience. That's so important in transit. I don't know if we talked about the RTA, like about this 2016, knocking on them doors. I was one of the only people who were doing it because the RTA didn't have a field team. That was what I think that was the reason why everyone blames Macomb County for why 2016 RTA failed, and they voted it down. I don't think it was McComb's fault. It was the leadership's fault because they didn't have a field team going out, knocking on doors, getting outreach, doing all the stuff that we're doing now, retrospectively. But and if we want to get 2020 on the ballot, like we have to have this sort of grassroots momentum.
To be a ground game.
Yeah,
there has to be. And I don't think they campaigned, and I think to be really honest with Macomb and Oakland County, there was a lot of those kind of canned narratives, like oh they just don't like transit or racist. And some of those things are
basically
true.
They dismissed them, said racism, and then that was
right. Like, but that doesn't really tell the full story.
Exactly.
Proposition. They didn't see the value. Of
they didn't
what
do their
was
work.
Being
they
proposed
were
because
to
there was no reach out. I think, just as you said earlier,
I think racism is a lazy answer.
It really is.
I don't want you to just say racism because that means like racist. Like
race has a factor,
but it's not the whole
very easy answer beyond. You're not going beneath.
Exactly. Indeed. Exactly. Right. Like you. There's so many things you like. I can't fix racism, but I can do a lot of things to help a lot of people who are disproportionately affected by racial structures.
Right.
There's a lot of things you can do, and so for them to just say racism or Macomb County or whatever. Macomb County has the most comprehensive transit of all the counties in Macomb County. Don't have any opt-out communities. So all through SMART. So Wayne County.
Dang.
This has been my thing with Detroit and Wayne County. Like we gotta pull our weight in our own county. How are we gonna have opt-out communities right next door to us when we have like the majority of the political power within our county?
Mm-hmm.
We can like Macomb has an entire county of SMART millage. Like Oakland County has opt-out communities too. But so what they were saying is we already have our transit like sort of figured out.
I read that same article. We already have it. We have SMART.
I get it. I think they're being short-sighted in the fact they don't want to be connected to the rest of the region, and that might have like some of the undertones we're talking about.
And that's okay. Yeah. The thing is, maybe that's not what we need to connect with that. But my detention that I have though is like, dang, what about the people in that county that did vote yes?
Exactly.
It was so narrow. But I think the other issue with that too is that that county was figuring, ooh, this is going to kind of jeopardize our election for SMART. Remember, they had to reauthorize SMART? So they had to make a choice, RTA or something we've been using for 20-something years. So it's
I don't blame them that.
Into these narratives. You busted the narrative right on this podcast. You blew it all apart to smithereens.
I'm sitting here like, wow.
Yeah, I'm like,
wow.
It makes perfect sense.
I think I like our leadership. I think we're in good hands. Angelica, Matthew Webb, the RTA, Mark DeLaverne, DDOT Innovation.
Yeah.
I think all these people are intelligent people who are working really hard to make a service better.
Yeah.
And I think all the DDOT staff, I think as it's our role as a community to tell them
when they keep them on their toes.
Yeah. And I think they do a good job of responding.
And they need that information from us. They encourage us too.
Yeah. That's why we pushed for those meetings to come back, because we felt like if it was quarterly, they would get a little lazy. Like, not saying they won't do their job, but you need the input of the community to know that you're doing your job right in the first place.
And the real theme is, like, if it's a public service delivery or if it's urban planning, the key thing that I'm picking up in our conversation is talk to people.
It's so simple.
Did you know
so
that you can talk to people and find out what they want, and then it could actually inform a plan?
You don't have to do. There's this thing
isn't that awesome, Sam?
There's this wonderful thing that used to happen called armchair anthropology, in which old European white men would sit in their homes and think about how the other half lived in other countries and make up whole narratives without actually ever going to the countries to talk to people about how they're actually living, like, for real. And they wrote books, tons of things came out about it.
That's your field of study, right?
Yeah, anthropology. So I feel like sometimes
people
sometimes we get that happens to us here. Like, people are like, we think the public would like this, and we're gonna do that, and we're like, no, we never asked for that.
Deaf, basically. So what you describe is being tone deaf, and we cannot afford that. Just go around when we're now with this new plan, and now we have to kind of think of, like, I guess, with mobility too, and then, like, not only think about transit in terms of lines and routes and buses, but also communities.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what communities are being touched by this? Mm-hmm. Who is still being left out?
Like,
that's the thing. And how do you find that out, y'all?
Yeah. So too long didn't listen. Don't be an armchair anthropologist.
Or an armchair activist. Or
thank you.
Armchair organizer.
Actually, get out there and talk to people.
Yes.
Right.
Get up, or, you know, I don't want to use ableist language. Get out in the community and talk to people.
Yeah. There you go. Get out.
There we go.
We can do that. Yeah. All right. Well, that's all the questions we got for you today. Yeah. Like, you were amazing. But thank you so much, Chris, for coming.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was so great. I was so excited but nervous, and I was like,
I wasn't nervous.
You strolled in. I had time to be nervous.
I lied. I was a little bit nervous because I didn't know who our guest was. I just had the name, and I'm like,
we know each other from all the meetings.
Where you guys knew each other? Because I asked, I was like, do you know a Christopher LaFleur? Like, I feel like him.
One question.
Okay, what's the last?
It's so interesting.
Okay, go.
Are you related to Ingrid LaFleur?
My last names are spelled differently.
That was it, Sam.
Okay. Well, without further ado, let's wrap it up. Once again, my name is Sam.
I'm Ray.
Chris.
And you were listening to the Do Better DDOT podcast. Bye.
Out of here.